Hey, Two Seekers. What the hell happened to the music? Oh, well, play some more Dave Brubeck. Go ahead, bring it up. It's better than Pink Floyd anyway, right? Ha! Welcome to Church Night here on the Molloy Program. Yeah, it's Wednesday night, and just about anyone who listens to this program understands what Church Night's all about. It's in recognition or commemoration or whatever of all the Wednesday nights I used to go to prayer meeting with my grandparents and watch the adults writhe around on their knees with their hands folded on the seats of the ladder-back wooden chairs in the upper room. In the summertime, when it was hot. Ah! It was great fun. Really convinced me that I wanted to be a Christian. Oh, yeah. Woo! Anyway, in recognition of that, we do church night on Wednesday night. Some of you may have had the same sorts of experiences when you were a tad and somebody else had control of your lives, right? It is church night. Right before the show, I get an email from GK in Minnesota, and this is one hell of a story. I've got to share this for you. There's a Kansas doctor who is under attack by the usual murderous forces for not forcing a 10-year-old rape victim to give birth. Yeah. Dr. Ann Newhouse has taken up the cause of women's rights after the Christian jihadist Scott Roeder was led to murder Dr. George Tiller in 2009. Of course, Scott Roeder's co-conspirator was Bill O'Reilly, a rancid son of a bitch who wasn't indicted along with Scott Roeder. But it was Bill O'Reilly who pushed and pushed and pushed until Scott Roeder snapped and murdered Dr. George Tiller in 2009. And now Dr. Newhouse may lose her license for the crime, or in the words of these rat bastards, the sin of not forcing a mentally ill 10-year-old child who was raped by her uncle to carry the baby to term. This is from addictinginfo.org. There are people in Kansas who think, therefore, it is proper. There are people in the U.S. House and Senate. There are people running for the presidency who think it is proper that a 10-year-old rape victim should be forced to carry the fetus to term. Are you listening to this? Kathy, would a 10-year-old's pelvis be able to expand enough to even give birth, or would they force her to have a C-section? A 10-year-old. A 10-year-old. You tell me how diseased, how effed up, how filthy this anti-abortion movement has become. This is just... So Operation Rescue, the group that has an alarmingly high number of ties to various incidents involving domestic Christian terrorism, including Scott Roeder and Bill O'Reilly's murder of Dr. George Tiller, that Operation Rescue has filed a negligence complaint against Dr. Newhouse, alleging that her exams were not thorough enough to support her medical conclusion and her follow-up care was inadequate because she did not recommend counseling or hospitalization after each procedure. Dr. Newhouse answered by saying, quote, "To even claim that isn't medically necessary qualifies as gross incompetence. Someone's 10-year-old was raped by her uncle. And the child understands they've got a baby growing in her stomach, and they don't want that. You're going to send this girl for a brain scan and some blood work and put her in a hospital?" Now, the Kansas Medical Board that reviews all this, Kansas Medical Board includes a former lawyer for Operation Rescue, a former lawyer who, by extension, along with Bill Riley, was involved in the murder of Dr. George Tiller. The Kansas Medical Board produced what they said was an expert who testified that abortion can never be considered to have a positive impact on a patient's mental health, which is not the point being argued. The point being argued is whether or not an abortion is more appropriate than forcing a 10-year-old to give birth to her uncle's rape against her will. 10 years old! God damn it, I have an 8-year-old. I know 10-year-olds. I see them every day at Molly's school. You filthy, filthy right-wing bastards. You're going too far. You really are going too far. One of these days, somebody's going to go berserk and walk into one of your filthy holes of religious insanity with a gun. Oh, I think that happened today. So this is what the fanatics, these filthy, degenerate, gutter Christians are doing. They would happily sacrifice this 10-year-old child in order to save their goddamn fetus. The Kansas Medical Review Board has already declined to renew Dr. Newhouse's license. She has appealed. If she loses her appeal, she permanently loses her ability to practice medicine. And that's the only thing that matters to this filthy, gutter, stinking, corpse-eating, filthy anti-abortion movement. I cannot come up with harsh enough or strong enough language about these scum. A 10-year-old. God damn you people. You have 10-year-old daughters? What would you do? What would you do? How about you, Tony Perkins? You got a 10-year-old daughter? You ever had one? Supposing your brother raped her and impregnated her and she was 10. What would you do, Tony Perkins? You filthy swine. This morning, a guy walks into the Family Research Council headquarters in Washington, D.C., which is not about family, it's not about research, it is a council, it's a council of goddamn Christian corpse eaters. This guy walked in this morning, security guard tried to stop him, security guard was shot, security guard pulled his weapon, held him until the police could get there, nobody was killed. A local NBC affiliate is reporting there were Chick-fil-A promotional materials in the shooter's backpack. You know this has got to be a conservative. Liberals hate guns. We hate them. So this had to be a conservative who walked in with a Sig Sauer 9mm handgun, pulled it from his backpack. The guard confronted him. They had an altercation before the shooter fired, striking the guard in the arm. The guard gained control of the weapon and held it on the suspect. Authorities found 2 loaded magazines, 15 rounds each, in the suspect's backpack, as well as Chick-fil-A promotional materials. One of these days, people who have gotten enough of these right-wing devils are going to start responding. You suppose today was the day?
Truth Seekers, Uncle Mikey has another bedtime story. Back to Mike Malloy.
Past the hour. This hour is being sponsored by Chris in New York. His message, this is a reminder to all Truth Seekers to sign up for a podcast subscription and sponsor an hour of the program. I'd like that. Chris in New York is this hour's sponsor. Reminder to all Truth Seekers, sign up for a podcast subscription and sponsor an hour of the program. Thanks, Chris.
I think to force a 10-year-old to have a baby, anything, is even a baby kitten, is just beyond evil. But I have a larger question. I think I've posited this before on the program, and I've never really understood the answers I've gotten. What do the Republicans want to do with all the unwanted babies? What is their plan? Because you think about a 10-year-old who's raped and is going to have a baby, or a 12-year-old, or a 14-year-old, or a 44-year-old. They're not going to raise these rapist children.
They don't know. Well, wait. You say you haven't gotten an adequate answer. This is not about stopping abortions. This is about controlling women.
Okay, I understand.
Okay,
but the end result.
So they don't
is
care.
Babies.
They don't. But they don't care.
Okay, and even if these are babies, or forget the rapists. What about women who just, oops, I'm pregnant. I'm not ready for this right now, and they're gonna have where and the daddy's gone, and you know, I mean, are the all these fine, upstanding Republican men all of a sudden gonna become wonderful, caring fathers of these babies? You know, you go out and have an affair with a woman, you get her pregnant, you're going to just, what, divorce your wife and raise this kid?
No, of course not. Of course not. But again, Kathy, and you know this, most of what you're posing here, or positing, as
well,
you
is
said.
Well, is the state? Is it going to be welfare? Who's going to take care of these children?
Is purely rhetorical. You know, and I know, and most people who advocate for a woman's right to privacy, we all understand that this has nothing whatsoever to do with abortion and everything to do with control versus privacy.
I understand.
Okay.
Just in theory, if you asked one of them,
they don't care.
Do you want? How do you want to pay for all the babies?
But if you But if you ask them that question, the answer would just be a dumbfounded, cross-eyed look from these evil sons of bitches, because they don't consider. They don't care. They don't care what happens if one of these fetuses pop out and is a living, breathing human. That's not what they're about. They're about control. They're about religious fanaticism. They are nuts.
So what do you think a Paul Ryan would say if in an interview someone said, you know, Representative Ryan, what is your plan to deal with the sudden influx of babies?
Tell you what,
send
an email to his campaign and ask him. See what kind of,
because we know he doesn't want Medicaid.
See what kind of a response you get,
or any kind of government assistance for these children. So what are they supposed to do? Are they just going to, you know, go to some orphanage until they can join the war movement?
What you're doing is what so many people on the left are inclined to do. You are seeking a rational answer from people who are, if not insane, totally irrational. Again, they don't care about fetuses or abortions or zygotes or clumps of cells or the morning after pill. That is the smokescreen. What they care about is controlling women to the point. You see, you women really, you really pulled a fast one on us men in 1960, when some crazy son of a bitch invented the pill, which means that you women could have sex as often as you wanted and not get pregnant and not suffer the religious or biblical consequences of having sex. I mean, stop and think. In some Muslim countries, they perform clitorectomies on people so that, not to stop them from having sex, but to stop them from enjoying it.
No, I'm hip. I'm just saying.
Okay, well, you
all
know
I'm
all
saying
this.
Is
you
why is no
this.
Reporter? Why is no one even? I've never even heard the question asked. And there have to be. If you calculated the number of abortions that occur in this country, and then the number of pregnancies that are prevented with birth control, then That would be a lot of babies. Also, I have another question. Why aren't they trying to stop vasectomies? It has the same result.
Stop.
Why has no one come up and said, we're going to make vasectomies illegal?
Kathy.
Because the only reason you have a vasectomy is to prevent a pregnancy. You don't have a vasectomy for the hell of it.
You know damn good. Well, I don't know why you're presenting these questions. You know the answers. You know what the power structure is. You know what they're about. You know what these Christian slavers are up to. Come on. Come on.
Would you volunteer for a vasectomy? Just for giggles?
At my age?
At any age? Is there a reason for a vasectomy other than to prevent pregnancy?
That's the only thing I can think of.
Well, me too. Why aren't they trying to stop them? You're killing potential babies. Vasectomies. They want to stop women.
Who's stopping vasectomies?
No, why aren't they?
Oh,
why aren't the Catholics and the Republicans trying
to? Who knows?
Used to do all my favorite analgesics. Anything to numb these feelings. Putting on the television. This might be my last decision. Everybody's out there looking for a new pill to make them happy like the old pill. Used to do. Everybody's out there looking for a new pill to make them happy like the old pill. Used to do.
You're listening to Mike Malloy. Turn down your speakers. It'll be our secret.
Open your eyes. 25 before the hour. This hour is being sponsored by Chris from New York. His message, this is a reminder to all truth seekers to sign up for a podcast subscription and sponsor an hour of this program. Thanks, Chris. From Bruce, regarding Kathy's question, what happens to all the children? Bruce writes, it's easy. What to do with all the unwanted children? God will provide. Right to life ends at birth. If the child starves in the gutter with its mother, well, that's God's will. Of course, this is what these corpse-eating bastards will tell you if you ask them. Man, how much of this are we supposed to put up with before we decide that's enough? From Lee in New York, this is for synagogue night. Lee writes, hi Mike, I found this AP report through Tegan Goddard's Political Wire. Here it is. Leader of anti-Semitic party in Hungary discovers he is Jewish. From Budapest. Translated, I guess, by Lee in New York City. As a rising star in Hungary's far-right Jobbik party, Szanád Szigeti was notorious for his incendiary comments on Jews. He accused them of buying up the country. He railed about the Jewishness of the political elite and claimed Jews were desecrating national symbols. Then came a revelation that knocked him off his perch as ultranationalist standard bearer. Szigeti himself is a Jew. Following weeks of internet rumors, Szigeti acknowledged in June that his grandparents on his mother's side were Jews, making him one too under Jewish law, even though he doesn't practice the faith. By the way, his grandmother was an Auschwitz survivor and his grandfather a veteran of forced labor camps. Oy gewalt. Lee in New York City. Now, if I were Jewish, I would send this creep bastard a cable or an email or a wire or a telegram and tell him I was revoking his Jewishness. Oy gewalt indeed. This is from thenewnationofislam.com. Okay, it's mosque night. There's a photo here of Barack Obama and his cabinet and advisors sitting around a long table. And the newnationofislam.com writes, the above photo of the president and his cabinet of advisors reminds me of something I read in the Holy Bible. Two verses come to mind. Proverbs 11:14 says, where no counsel is, the people fall. But in the multitude of counselors, there is safety. And Proverbs 15, verse 22 says, without counsel, purposes are disappointed. But in the multitude of counselors, they are established. The members of Congress, then, who keep refusing to recognize the policy-making authority of the current president and his administration simply because he is a black man. They pretend to have the nation's best interests at heart while opposing the man who was elected to guide the nation by the vote of the American people. Look at the picture of the president and his cabinet. When he comes up with a policy or course of action, he's not the Lone Ranger, but he and his advisors have painstakingly agonized over that policy, and afterward he made a decision based on the wise counsel that he brought with him to his cabinet. The members of Congress who treat the president with such disdain and disrespect are so caught up in racism that they don't see that it's not just the black-skinned president that they are disrespecting, but the people in his cabinet and all of those who voted for the president. Also, by not recognizing the authority of the man who was elected by a majority vote of the American people, they show the utmost of disrespect to the very system of government that they claim to cherish. Lastly, this course of action embarked upon by members of the congressional body has brought Congress into dishonor and disrespect. From the Islamic side of the aisle. Yeah, well, okay. Edwina Rogers, executive director of the Secular Coalition for America, condemned the shooting at the Family Research Council. She said, quote, while we disagree with the Family Research Council on nearly every issue, the debate surrounding the role of religion in the public sphere should be fought with reason and logic, not guns. We absolutely condemn this sort of senseless violence. This is from Politicus USA. It is inevitable that some individuals on the far right will use the actions of one person to further their political agenda. I can hear Fox, Rush Limbaugh, and Glenn Beck using this incident to fuel their fantasies of a violent left that is coming to get believers and people of faith. Oh, yeah. I mean, This is what Glenn Beck wants. This is what that murderous son of a bitch wants. It's what Limbaugh has been pushing for the better part of a quarter century. It's what Bill O'Reilly licks his lips about. This is what will cause Sarah Palin to get all twisty and jump around up in Wasilla, Alaska, probably make her call her husband in real quick. Honey! Wow! Oh, they're killing each other! Come here! Come here! But, you know, you push and you push and you push and you push and you push some more, and you denigrate and you push and you push and you push the way the right wing has been doing in this country for the better part of 30 years, and especially for the last 10. You take the nation into wars in violation of every agreement we've ever signed. You condemn people to homelessness because you support this murderous, filthy financial services industry. Your list goes on and on of all the things you right wingers just keep pushing and pushing and pushing and pushing. And eventually somebody's going to stand up and slap you right across your goddamn face. And you're going to fall down in a little puddle of tears and whining. And then if I'm in the group surrounding you, we will take your pants off and give you a bad case of red ass and then set you free. Now, on the other hand, I certainly hope that scenario doesn't come to pass for the simple reason that this is what the right wing wants. This is what the neo-fascists want. Not that Glenn Beck or Rush Limbaugh or Sean Hannity or Ann Coulter or any of these other pigs would join the fray with broken bottles or torches or pitchforks or guns or whips or chains or, well, Ann Coulter might. No, no. They would stand back away from the fray that they had caused and the bloodshed and the destruction, laughing and feeling wonderful. And probably even experiencing something akin to sexual satisfaction. That's how twisted these filthy voices really, really are. They need to be stopped from broadcasting, from printing, from writing, from talking. They need to be sent with their millions to some place where they can talk to each other until they all go insane. In the meantime, they're driving this country insane. Free speech? Free speech does not include promoting murder. Bill O'Reilly, Sean Hannity, Rush Limbaugh, Ann Coulter, this is what they do on a daily, if not hourly, basis. Promote murder. On and on and on. What will rational people do about it? Don't know. Maybe arm themselves with Chick-fil-A promotional material and go try to pick a fight with somebody. Oh, and by the way, Nellie Gray, the woman who left a career in government to start what was called the March for Life, the annual anti-abortion demonstration that for nearly four decades has drawn tens of thousands of activists to Washington to speak out on one of the most polarized American social issues, is dead. She was 88. They don't know why. A colleague said they found Miss Gray dead Monday in her Capitol Hill home. The chief medical examiner will determine the cause and date of her death. But it was rather smelly inside the apartment. We'll be right back.
If you're not this angry, then you're not paying attention. Back to Mike Malloy.
Ten before the hour, this hour has been sponsored by Chris in New York. Chris's message, this is a reminder to all Truth Seekers to sign up for a podcast subscription and to sponsor an hour of the program. Thanks, Chris. Thanks for the message, too. From the BBC, it appears that UK authorities in London are getting ready to storm the Ecuadorian embassy to arrest Julian Assange. What? It's from the BBC. That is the perception of the Ecuadorian foreign minister, Ricardo Patino. According to BBC, Ecuador has accused the UK of making a threat to enter its embassy in London to arrest WikiLeaks' Julian Assange. Mr. Assange took refuge in the embassy in June to avoid extradition to Sweden, where he faces questioning over assault and rape claims, which he denies. Ecuador's foreign minister, Ricardo Patino, also said a decision on Assange's bid for political asylum had been made and would be revealed on Thursday, tomorrow. The British Foreign Office said it could revoke the embassy's diplomatic status. My God, when's the last time you've heard of an embassy being stormed? Oh, that's right. It was U.S. Embassy in 1979 in Tehran. The Chinese don't even do this. In a statement issued as Mr. Patino spoke, the UK said they had a legal obligation to extradite Mr. Assange, to kidnap him, to take him off Ecuadorian soil, which is what the Ecuadorian embassy is, whether it's in London or Washington, D.C. Assange maintains that he fears Sweden will pass him on to the American authorities. The American authorities want this guy real bad. Don't forget, the Obama administration has sounded the death knell for whistleblowers. The laws that have been signed by the executive orders signed by Barack Obama dwarfs anything that the Bush crime family did where it concerned leaks. Now, perhaps Obama felt the need to do that because, don't forget, you know where these leaks are coming from. They're coming from the Bush-Cheney moles that were left behind. If you remember, right towards the end of the Bush crime family's ripping and destroying this country, a lot of the political appointees that were put in there, mostly by Cheney and the neoconservatives who want to destroy America, most of those, or not most, a huge number of those federal appointees were changed to civil service status, which means that when the Bush crime family left office, these people didn't just automatically go or get fired by the incoming administration, or not fired, but replaced. They now had civil service status. This was a deliberate move promoted by the flying monkey right in this country to maintain moles all over inside the Obama administration, so that not in the executive office, but in all the offices where policy is either made or carried out, so that at any time when the right-wing fascists pull the trigger, so to speak, these moles produce the information that will embarrass the Obama administration, so the right-wing fascists outside the administration, as they are doing now, can start screaming about the information being leaked from inside, quote, the Obama administration, end quote, which is not where it's coming from. But you see how evil these sons of bitches are. They will betray their own country. Well, so did Hitler. They will betray their own country in order to assume power. Maybe Diana in Florida is right. In responding to all this, the Obama administration, Obama himself, has issued executive orders smashing down on the whistleblowers, so-called. The pieces of human waste that were transferred by the Bush crime family from appointees to civil service employees are the ones who should be smashed. But everybody suffers in the process. So when you read about all this stuff about leaks here and leaks there, don't for a second assume that it's coming from anybody who is a political appointee by Barack Obama. This is coming from the moles, the scum, the filth that was left behind deliberately and consciously by the Bush crime family. And specifically, to have information leaked out so they could then start screaming about the Obama administration can't even maintain secrecy on issues that need to be remain secret. Having said all that, it ties in, although not necessarily as the Obama administration, with the Bush crime family that wanted Julian Assange more than Dick Cheney wanted to steal somebody else's heart. I mean, they wanted this guy. They wanted him so badly. You talk about Guantanamo. Julian Assange is no fool. So, in my opinion, a couple of women that he was having an affair with were approached by the CIA and made them an offer they couldn't refuse. Now, am I being a sexist pig? Did Julian Assange really rape and assault two women? Please. Please. So now the UK is threatening to use force to enter a foreign embassy to grab this guy, to hand him either to the U.S. authorities or Sweden, which will in turn hand him to the U.S. Have I hit your gag reflex yet? It is 7 past the hour. This is Malloy's show. This hour is being sponsored by Ring of Fire Radio. Traditional media is dead or dying, but they're still alive at Ring of Fire Radio. RingofFireRadio.com. Check them out. If you don't know the people who do that program, you should. And most of them had to do with Air America at one time, as did moi. RingofFireRadio.com. Email from Michael, who says, honestly, I don't think the business with Assange has anything to do with Bush-era moles. No, I didn't. I didn't mean that. What I'm talking about are the leaks that are coming out of the Obama government from various departments. I think, Michael goes on, Obama's gone stone-cold paranoid about unfavorable leaks, period. WikiLeaks presents an ongoing threat in that regard. I don't think the UK threatening the Ecuadorian embassy has anything to do, or has everything to do with both Bush and Obama. I don't deny that, because there's more to be leaked out. But don't forget, Julian Assange is a Bush-era liberator. And Michael goes on, there's no love lost between the U.S. and Ecuador. Correa, the president of Ecuador, threw out our spooks and military at the airbase at Manta, Ecuador. Yeah, but wasn't that during the Bush years? Anyway, Michael says, can't blame this one on the Bushies. This is all Obama's doing. I'm just about ready to start referring to him as the Black Nixon. Well, I think there are two, I may be wrong, it just seems to me there are two subjects being kind of mushed up here. Assange is about cables that fly between the U.S. government and other governments, and between other governments and other governments still, regarding the machinations and chicanery that goes on in providing anything the 1% wants and screwing everybody else. The WikiLeaks situation. The moles that were specifically, and I remember this, the people that were turned from Bush-era appointees into civil servants. Those are the people I'm talking about. Storm the embassy? Oh, yeah. That'll be brilliant. That'll be brilliant. At a news conference in Quito, Ecuador on Wednesday, Mr. Patino said the letter from the UK government was delivered through a British embassy official. Patino said, today we received from the United Kingdom an express threat in writing that they might storm our embassy in London if we don't hand over Julian Assange. Ecuador rejects in the most emphatic terms the explicit threat of the British official communication. Explicit, not implicit. He said such a threat was, quote, improper of a democratic, civilized, and rule-abiding country. He added, quote, if the measure announced by the British official communication is enacted, it will be interpreted by Ecuador as an unacceptable, unfriendly, and hostile act, and as an attempt against our sovereignty. It would force us to respond. We are not a British colony. End quote. A British Foreign Office spokesman said the UK remained, quote, determined, end quote, to fulfill its obligation to extradite Mr. Assange. Extradite is a very polite term in this case. What it means is kidnap him from Ecuadorian territory, the embassy. The spokesman for the Foreign Office went on, quote, throughout this process, we have drawn the Ecuadorians' attention to relevant provisions of our law, whether, for example, the extensive human rights safeguards in our extradition procedures or to the legal status of diplomatic premises in the UK. The law under which Britain is threatening to invoke in the Assange case is the Diplomatic and Consular Premises Act of 1987. It allows the UK to revoke the diplomatic status of an embassy on UK soil, which would potentially allow police to enter the building to arrest Mr. Assange. So if I'm reading this right, the Brits are willing to break off diplomatic relations with another country in a very abrupt and decidedly warlike manner in order to grab Julian Assange, the guy that most of the intelligence people who have read the cables have said he's not a threat to anyone's national security. What he is a threat to is the ruling class in all these different countries. He is definitely a threat to the ruling class. Based on that, they will try to kill him. If the Brits or the Swedes get their hands on Assange, and eventually the United States, Mr. Julian Assange will have, you know, an accident, or he will have become so depressed that he will hang himself. Right? Of course. The BBC's deputy political editor says the British government has been in long negotiations with Ecuador over the issue, and has reminded Ecuador of the Diplomatic and Consular Premises Act of 1987. Even if Mr. Assange is granted asylum, and we'll know tomorrow, truth seekers, he will have to cross British territory and could be arrested. On Monday, 2 days ago, Ecuador's President Rafael Correa said a decision would be made this week after he held a meeting with his advisors. And lest we forget, In 2010, two female ex-WikiLeaks volunteers alleged that Mr. Assange, an Australian citizen, had attacked them while he was in Stockholm to give a lecture. Assange claims the sex was consensual and the allegations are politically motivated. He says he's concerned he may be sent to the U.S. to face espionage charges. Ooh, that would be firing squad. In June, judges at the U.K. Supreme Court dismissed his final appeal against extradition to Sweden. An offer to the Swedish authorities by Ecuador for investigators to interview Mr. Assange inside the embassy was rejected. So Ecuador approached the Swedes and said, well, you know, if you want to send some of your interrogators and find out, you know, use your expert ability to question someone to make a determination if there's probable cause, sure, come on in. No, we're not going to do that. Wow. There's much more to a story like this, of course, than what meets the eye, and we all know this. I'll have more when we come back. Stay with us.
He hates these people. It's Mike Malloy.
Which people? So, all right. Some more information here. First of all, Kelly Walters, who is the producer of the Shannon Moore Show in Alaska, Moore up north, just sent me a link to a video feed on Ustream from someone outside the Ecuadorian embassy in London. Of course, it's, what is it, 4 a.m. there? We will probably put a link up at my website to this particular Ustream channel a little bit later this evening so you can watch it if you like. But also, I have in front of me here, who sent this to me? WH, is that right? Okay. WH sent me an article from Reuters article from last April 2011. Ecuador has demanded the United States ambassador leave that country, declaring the envoy, and that would have been... what's her name? Oh, I'll get to it in a second. Declaring the envoy persona non grata over U.S. diplomatic cables released by WikiLeaks reporting alleged police corruption. Foreign Minister Ricardo Patino told reporters he had not received a satisfactory explanation from U.S. Ambassador Heather Hodges, there you go, about cables previously released by WikiLeaks and signed by her office. So Ecuador's foreign minister said Ecuador's government has decided to consider this woman as a persona non grata. We have asked her to leave the country in the shortest time possible. Patino said the decision did not mean Ecuador is breaking off relations with the U.S., and he hoped relations would not be affected by the measures against Hodges. The U.S. government, at this point in time, it would be the Obama administration, said the expulsion was, quote, unjustified. The Ecuadorian embassy in Washington said the measure was aimed at Ms. Hodges, not the U.S. government. And apparently, according to the Ecuadorian foreign minister, Hodges had signed cables that suggested high-level police commanders were aware of corrupt practices, and that one embassy official believed the president's office also knew, the president of Ecuador. President Rafael Correa, of course, is aligned with leftist governments in the region. We can't have any of that. He has clashed with the U.S. before. In 2009, he expelled two U.S. embassy officials for meddling in internal affairs. In a different case, Ecuador late last year had initially offered WikiLeaks founder Assange the possibility of working and seeking residency in Ecuador, but President Correa later withdrew the offer, saying Assange had broken U.S. law. Oh, it's just so damned intriguing, isn't it? I mean, I would much rather watch As the World Turns than this crap. But that might give you an idea of what maybe possibly could be going on. You know, governments that are fascist or becoming fascist or moving toward fascism just don't like their secrets out there. You know, I mean, and if anything, the WikiLeaks revelations have been stunning. And, of course, they've been published by, you know, the leading newspapers around the globe. Article in a recent issue of Nation magazine about how the WikiLeaks documents were published in South America, how difficult it was at the time to find a newspaper that wasn't still controlled by the right-wingers in so many South American countries. But, you know, that's an area of the globe that nobody here ever talks about. You ever notice that? I defy you to turn on the news, any news, and hear something about South America. Brazil has become or is becoming a global power. It's on the verge of developing a nuclear industry and its own nuclear bomb. It may already have a nuclear industry. I don't know. See? Who knows? Brazil also is the country that some environmentalists say has the lungs of the earth with the Amazon rainforest that is being slowly eaten up by developers. And some of the people in high positions in the Brazilian political establishment do not want that to continue. But there are forces, capitalist forces, that say, what are you talking about? What do you mean you don't want to continue? A bunch of Indians live in there? Big deal. Snakes and a few panthers? Please. But we never hear about South America, do we? We never talk about South America on this program, do we? It, you know, doesn't really exist unless Rush Limbaugh starts talking about it, right?
Liberal with a microphone, and that makes him dangerous.
Oh, yeah.
It's Mike Malloy.
Sure. 25 before the hour. This hour is being sponsored by Ring of Fire Radio. Their message? Traditional media is dead or dying, but we are still alive at Ring of Fire Radio. Check them out, ringoffireradio.com, ringoffireradio.com. Thanks, guys. I've got a request here for Vietnam vets. Substantial number of Vietnam vets who listen to this program, and I'd like to ask you a favor. I've got a request here from a listener. If any Vietnam vet knows the name of a Loach pilot call sign, Angry Mouse. My correspondent said, I just spent 2 hours on the phone with my dad talking about Nam, and he couldn't remember his name. Anybody know? If you were in Vietnam, do you know the name of a Loach pilot whose call sign was Angry Mouse? If you do, will you send me an email? I would appreciate it. Angry Mouse. I like this. This is ridiculous at this point to even bring this up. But Pat Robertson was a little late to the chicken sandwich picnic. He is joining the chorus of those who were condemning Chick-fil-A's pro LGBT rights protesters. He is challenging them to, quote, to bring forth a baby from that part of the anatomy which they concentrate on. Jesus God! Would you like to watch, Pat? I mean, what? Is he so stupid that he doesn't think a woman, any woman, Pat, it doesn't make any difference about the sexual orientation. They still have the equipment to, yeah, bring forth from that part of the anatomy a baby. He's talking about men. Well, men don't bring forth babies anyway. No, I think you're confusing it, Kathy. Right Wing Watch reported that Robertson seemingly mocked the national controversy surrounding Chick-fil-A on 700 Club a couple of days ago. He said, quote, it's a chicken sandwich. It's a piece of white meat chicken between two pieces of white bread. It's also a milkshake. Now we're going to have demonstrations over that? No, you dumbass. Is he getting senile? Calling it, quote, it's an abomination for a man to lie with a man as a woman. I defy these homosexuals to bring forth a baby from that part of the anatomy that they concentrate on. When that happens, I will change everything I'm saying. Until that happens, I just wish these demonstrators would shut their mouth. What? Well, Robertson seems to conveniently overlook heterosexual couples who are either unable to bear children or choose not to. His anti-gay proclamations are just so old and stupid. You know, this is a guy that said gay folk were victims of demonic possession. No, what he's saying, Kathy, he says he's challenging gay people to bring forth a baby from that part of the anatomy which they concentrate on. Now, surely he's not expecting a gay man to have a baby born down his penis. Oh, stop. No. Oh, my God. This is so sick. Pat Robertson, I'll tell you, when Pat steps off this earthly coil, if you hear about it around the time of his demise, quick, open a window. You will hear in the distance, cheering. It is church night. Jesus heals a same-sex partner. Have you heard about this one? Matthew 19, verses 10 to 12. From our days in Sunday school, many of us are familiar with the gospel story where Jesus healed the servant of a Roman centurion. The story is recorded in Matthew 8, 5:13 and Luke 7, 1:10. In Matthew, we are told that the centurion came to Jesus to plead for the healing of his servant. Jesus said he was willing to come to the centurion's house, but the centurion said there was no need for Jesus to do so. He believed that if Jesus simply spoke the word, his servant would be healed. Marveling at the man's faith, Jesus pronounced the servant healed. Luke tells a similar story. Just another miracle, right? Not so fast. In the original language, the importance of this story for gay, lesbian, and bisexual Christians is much clearer. The Greek word used in Matthew's account to refer to the servant of the centurion is pais. In the language of the time, pais had three possible meanings depending upon the context in which it was used. It could mean son or boy, it could mean servant, or it could mean a particular type of servant, one who was, quote, his master's male lover, end quote. Often these lovers were younger than their masters, even teenagers. To our modern minds, the idea of buying a teen lover seems repugnant, but we have to place this in the context of ancient cultural norms. And in ancient times, commercial transactions were the predominant form, a means of forming relationships. Under the law, the wife was viewed as the property of the husband, with a status just above that of a slave. Moreover, in Jesus' day, a boy or girl was considered of marriageable age upon reaching his or her early teens. It was not uncommon for boys and girls to marry at age 14 or 15, nor was it uncommon for an older man to marry a young girl. Fortunately, civilization has advanced, but these were the norms in the culture of Jesus' day. In that culture, if you were a gay man who wanted a male spouse, you achieved this, like your heterosexual counterpart, through a commercial transaction, purchasing someone to serve that purpose. A servant purchased to serve this purpose was often called a pais. Jesus heals a same-sex partner. And then these, I'm sure you're familiar with 2 Samuel verses 1 through 26, where King David found his friend Jonathan's love greater than that of women. And I have in front of me the New Living Translation, the English Standard Version Translation, the New American Standard Bible, the King James Bible, and the God's Word Translation. First, the New International Version. I grieve for you, Jonathan. You are very dear to me. Your love for me was wonderful, more wonderful than that of a woman. The New Living Translation. How I weep for you, Jonathan. Oh, how much I loved you. And your love for me was deep, deeper than the love of women. English Standard Version. I am distressed for you, my brother Jonathan. Very pleasant have you been to me. Your love to me was extraordinary, surpassing the love of women. New American Standard. Your love to me was more wonderful than the love of women. King James Version. I am distressed for thee, my brother Jonathan. Very pleasant hast thou been unto me. Thy love to me was wonderful, passing the love of women. And from God's Word Translation. I am heartbroken over you, my brother Jonathan. You were my great delight. Your love was more wonderful to me than the love of women. Ooh, I don't remember my Methodist minister or the Baptist minister that my grandparents used to, whose church my grandparents used to take me to, talking about David and Jonathan.
Ow!
Well, pointed out only in the context of the ridiculousness of us. Did the Christians assume that everybody in the entire Bible, the Jewish part and the new Jewish part, that everybody in the Bible, the entire Bible, and do the Islamists feel the same way? And do the Jews feel the same way? That every single person mentioned in their holy texts that correspond to each other all through those three religions, that everybody was not gay? Of all those thousands of begats and begets and beguts and I mean, just on and on. Do they really think that of the 12 disciples and Jesus wandering around, that nobody in that crowd was gay? Really? Muslims believe that none of the followers of Muhammad was gay? Nobody? In all these religious texts, there wasn't a gay man or a lesbian woman anywhere to be found? Really? Are you that delusional?
They can run and hide. Pissed us off, so we voted for Republicans. A form of suicide. Republican side!
Before the hour, this hour has been sponsored by Ring of Fire Radio. Their message, traditional media is dead or dying, but we are still alive at Ring of Fire Radio. Visit them at ringoffireradio.com. Thanks, guys. Appreciate the sponsorship. ringoffireradio.com. All right, from Michael again, regarding the moles left behind by the Bush crime family. Michael says, okay, but there's no evidence as yet of what you're suggesting. After all, Obama has been going after legitimate national security whistleblowers for unauthorized leaks, and not one of those indicted by Obama's Department of Justice is the so-called Bush mole, to my knowledge. When one of the Bush moles gets indicted, then I'll give credence to the hypothesis. Mostly, I think those so-called Bush moles were put into non-national security agencies to gum up the works, slow things down, etc., and hopefully keep a Bush thumb on the scales when it came to rulemaking and writing regulations. I think it would be a mistake to conflate legitimate whistleblowers with the so-called Bush moles. In the context of Assange, the recent indictments, the administration's obsession with leaks, etc., those moles are irrelevant and simply don't figure into the leaks that most perturb the administration. Michael. Okay, well, I'll accept the idea that the Bush moles were left behind to, as Michael puts it, gum up the works. I just can't ever believe that Dick Cheney was able to give up what he had for 8 years, that he had to leave people in charge. I mean, Dick Cheney authored a war. Dick Cheney authored that war in order to grab the oil of Iraq. Dick Cheney is truly a world-class fascist, truly a world-class killer, violator of the law. And I can't believe that after 8 years, he wasn't instrumental in leaving behind enough former appointees who now became civil servants in order to continue to pull information, to embarrass this administration. I agree with Michael that Obama has been a real killer on these security leaks. And I certainly don't argue with that. But it's just the whole creeped out 8 years of the Bush crime family, especially of Cheney. I mean, all the way back to September 11th, 2001, I cannot, will not, and simply, it is an impossibility for me to believe the official story of that horrible day. I can't do it. I've tried. So if the Bush crime family, and by that I mean Dick Cheney and his neocon army of ghouls, if they were to able to facilitate, let me use that word, facilitate the events that occurred on September 11, 2001, then, and the subsequent invasion and destruction of Iraq, they're capable of doing anything evil, vile, illegal, murderous. So, all right, we shall wait until somebody can be proven to have been. But who's going to reveal that? I mean, if somebody is busted for whistleblowing, is that person going to say, yeah, I was a Bush appointee, but, you know, I got switched to civil service. Damn, you caught me. Is someone in the Obama executive branch going to say, aha, you see, this guy was a Bush appointee and then switched to civil service, knowing full well that if he says that, he's immediately clawed, the president is, clawed, shredded by right-wing radio. And Obama will avoid a confrontation no matter what. We know this about him. He will not confront the right wing in this country. So the only question I would pose to Michael is, how would we ever know whether or not? Now, I realize that some of them are easily traceable. You know, he refers to Kiriakou, the career CIA person who was popped. But what about, you know, low-level people? It doesn't have to be somebody in the CIA. It's somebody who knows somebody who knows somebody, and the information is released. It's just impossible for me to say that the evil, ugly, filthy, murderous influence of Dick Cheney and that whole cabal of internationalists who are just intent on invading seven countries, they only got to two before they ran out of resources, apparently, and were so capable of setting up this country, facilitating what occurred in this country on September 11th, that they would be willing to just walk away. Okay, we had our 8 years of fun. Bye. I think I'll go shoot moose. Or my lawyer. No, Oh, well. We'll wait to see what happens. All right, coming up, what do we got next hour? Hold on a minute. Oh, yeah. If you read the New York Times, was it Monday? After the announcement about Ryan and Romney, you saw a piece on the cover that was a suck piece, commonly referred to as a puff piece. We're going to talk about Paul Ryan. We're going to talk about that a little bit when we come back. If we ever leave. Do-do-do-do-do. Are we about to leave? Is this the top of the hour break? It will be soon. Stick around. I'm Mike Malloy. Welcome back. It is 7 past the hour on Church Night here on the Molloy program. So, the one of the things Romney and Ryan have been talking about is how the Obama plan destroys Social Security. Have you heard him say that? $700 billion taken out of Social Security by the president to pay for his health reform. Everything, I know this is redundant, I know you're tired of hearing me say it. Everything a Republican member of Congress or elected official or candidate or post-candidate, everything out of their mouths is a lie. And the people who vote for these scum appreciate the lies, because it prevents him from thinking clearly, rationally, or logically. But this lie about the $700 billion taken out of Social Security needs just a quick parsing here. He was in Florida, when was it? Yesterday? I think it was yesterday. Romney was. And that's when he said it again, that the Affordable Care Act, Romney said, will cut more than $700 billion out of Medicare. But as Robert Reich points out in his blog, what Romney didn't say was, first of all, that Ryan, his running mate, Ryan's budget, approved by House Republicans and by Romney himself, would cut Medicare by the same amount, $700 billion. There is a big difference, though. The Affordable Care Act achieves the $700 billion in savings by reducing Medicare payments to drug companies, not to recipients. Hospitals, not to recipients. And other providers, rather than cutting payments to Medicare beneficiaries. Now, remember the Medicare prescription drug benefit that was jammed through by Chuckle Nuts, George W. Bush, and the Bush crime family, and, of course, the Congress. Oh, yeah, here, we're going to do this. This will immunize us against any charge we don't care of our seniors. Of course, it wasn't paid for. There's no money for it. This is your libertarian teabag right-wing Republican Party. Oh, we'll pass anything. No way to pay for it. So, since it was not paid for, there was no allowances to pay for it, where does the money come from? Well, it comes from the national debt. It puts us further and further and further in debt. The prescription drug plan also stipulated that the government would not bargain with the drug companies, whatever, for these prescription drugs. Whatever the price set by the drug companies, that was it. Isn't that wonderful? Isn't that the American free enterprise system? Oh, yeah. Competitive. Hog crap. Now, this is the same thing that they're saying about the Romney-Ryan plan to gut Medicare, destroy it, and put in place of it vouchers. And one of the underpinnings of this Ponzi scheme, oh, it's not even a Ponzi scheme, it's worse than that. This is just theft. One of the underpinnings of the R&R, replace Medicare with the voucher program, is, well, the prices will go down because the medical providers will have to compete, or the insurance companies will have to compete for your voucher money. Just like the drug companies are competing. Are you kidding me? But there are brain-dead, teabag right-wingers who have never read Ayn Rand, wouldn't know the Fountainhead from their mama's ass, who will vote for these guys. It's amazing. So, the Romney-Ryan plan, the Affordable Care Act, achieves the $700 billion cut by reducing Medicare payments to drug companies, hospitals, and other providers. It does not, repeat, not cut the money going to beneficiaries. So again, Romney is a goddamn liar. I mean, from top to bottom, this guy is a liar. And you know what really pisses me off about Romney? He smiles and grins when he laughs, or when he lies. I hate that. I'd rather have a liar who hasn't practiced the disguising body language, like Romney obviously has. Give me a liar who will look at me with the, and when he starts to lie, his gaze drifts away and he starts blinking like crazy, and he, you know, all of a sudden he's got an itch on the back of his head. Oh, look, I got an itch on the back of my head. Don't pay attention to what I'm saying. Look, I'm itching. I'm scratching the itch. You know, give me somebody who will use all those tells to tell you he's lying. Not some smiley-faced punk like Mitt Romney or Paul Ryan, who will look you right in the face and lie and be able to smile about it. That is a pathological liar. That is an experienced liar. That is somebody whose entire life is a lie. But I digress. The Romney-Ryan plan achieves its $700 billion in savings by turning Medicare into a voucher whose value doesn't keep up with expected increases in health care costs, thereby shifting the burden to Medicare beneficiaries, your grandmammy, your great-grandpappy, you know, those old people that you still have in your family. The ones who, without Medicare, you and your parents would have to take care of. Oh, God forbid! Not because you're not willing, but because you can't afford it. Who can? So, the Republicans want to affect their $700 billion in cuts by cutting beneficiaries, by cutting the payments to them. And what happens to the beneficiaries, the people on Medicare? Well, then they'll have to pay an average of almost $7,000 a year more for their Medicare insurance. That's according to an analysis of the Republican plan by the nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office. An extra $7,000 a year for their Medicare insurance. Now, where's your grandma going to get that? And you younger people, where's your great-grandma going to get that? Huh? And you not-so-young people, where are your parents going to get that? Think about it. Think about it as you walk into the voting booth and vote Republican. Think about the fact that you are slowly dragging a not very sharp razor right across your own goddamn throat. Now,
Radical Talk Radio, it's Mike Malloy.
Past the hour. Just one more comment on what Reich, Robert Reich had to say about the $700 billion cut that Obama keeps wetting, Romney keeps wetting his pants about in the Affordable Care Act. Well, two points, really. First of all, Ryan's plan cut $700 billion from Medicare, but the $700 billion that is cut by Ryan goes for more tax cuts for the ultra-wealthy. The $700 billion cut that the Affordable Care Act talks about is produced by reducing Medicare payments to big, to the drug companies, hospitals, and other providers. Now, the $700 billion savings that the Romney-Ryan plan says will materialize, that goes to bigger tax cuts for the very wealthy. Where does the $700 billion that's saved from the Affordable Care Act go? Time's up. The Affordable Care Act uses its Medicare savings to help children and lower-income Americans afford health care and to help seniors pay for prescription drugs by filling the so-called donut hole that this filthy Bush crime family left in Medicare Part D coverage. That's the prescription drug plan that Bush and Cheney decided nobody should have to pay for. It'll just go into the budget deficit and make it harder to govern the country, which is the whole idea. So there is a stark difference. I've said before, and I'll continue to say, that there is no difference between the two parties that is appreciable. And then I come up with something like this, and I was like, well, Malloy's contradicting himself again. No, I'm not. What makes the two parties similar is the fact that neither one of them will do the one thing, that will get health care costs under control, that will solve the budget deficit within a very short period of time, will arrest the incredible inflation. There is no inflation in this economy right now. None, except where it concerns medical care. The one thing that neither party will do to get all of this in check. That's right. Single payer health care. Or if you want to put it a little as communist sounding or socialist sounding, Medicare for everyone. So in that respect, both parties are the same. Both parties are still pandering, and so is the Democratic Party, to the sick industry, not health industry. These bastards aren't in it for health. They're in it for sick, and they're in it for profit. Nobody in this country with any seriousness addresses the two things that are absolutely necessary to get this country on the road to health. It's not more medicine. Two very simple things. You know what they are. Vigorous exercise and a reduction in daily caloric intake. That's it. Those two things. Cancer, heart disease, diabetes. All of it starts to reduce. So let's not kid ourselves, okay? I know Michelle Obama is pushing a diet and so on and so forth. And every time she does, these cockroaches on the right refer to, oh, it's the nanny state again. Oh, they're trying to tell us what to eat and drink. That's because you damn fools, you don't have the sense to do it yourself. So anyway, there are differences in the margins. Of course there are. The Democratic Party is crawling toward fascism. The Republican Party is in a sprint towards fascism. Both of them are moving in that direction. So where concerns health care, yes, the $700 billion savings in the Affordable Care Act, the Democrat slash Obama plan, that money goes for a useful purpose. And it comes from where it logically should come from. The Ryan-Romney plan, on the other hand, comes from cutting beneficiaries' payments and giving it to the wealthy for more tax cuts. So on that particular issue, go ahead. You decide which one you want. Go ahead. It's your choice. After all, this is a free country, right? And you know, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, you do get to vote, right?
Unless you're in Pennsylvania.
So, as long as you have your photo ID, as long as you have a birth certificate or your DNA genome or whatever, then you can vote. But in the meantime, just keep in mind that neither political party will do the one thing that is required. Single taxpayer health care.
Let Mike do it for you. It's Mike Malloy.
Let it be. Let it be.
25 before the hour. I opened up my New York Times. Was it Monday or Tuesday? And there on the front page, I think it was the front page, was this disgusting suck piece, or to put it more gently, puff piece on Paul Ryan after Romney had knuckled under to the crazy people in the Republican Party, which is all of them, and chosen this guy, which guarantees his defeat, by the way, Romney's defeat. But here's this puff piece on the front page of the New York Times. And in the first place, I couldn't believe it. This is one of the problems with media in this country. They bend over backwards to try to provide the illusion of balance and fair play. Look at all the ink that was wasted on the Obama birth certificate story. Not to mention the crapola that just belched from your TV set if you had the misfortune to tune into CNN, MSNBC, or the Rupert Murdoch Terror Broadcast Organization during the salad days of the birther movement, right? Birthers. Jesus. But anyway, so here's the New York Times. Listen to this. Listen to this paragraph. But the death of his father when Mr. Ryan was only 16 punctured his life of math tests and bike riding. And in that fissure, the seeds of his worldview were planted. His brother Tobin says, quote, Paul went to work at McDonald's and began to pull his own weight and became class president the same year. It is remarkable that he chose the path of individual responsibility and maturity rather than letting grief take a different course. Some of his political views, the brother continued, did begin to coalesce around the time of my father's passing, end quote. So Paul Ryan's self-reliance, according to the Times writers, followed him to summer camp, where as a counselor he canoed and hiked, and into young adulthood where he took up deer hunting, a fact noted in his engagement notice in 2000 in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. The paper reported, Ryan is an avid hunter and fisherman who does his own skinning and butchering and makes his own Polish sausage and bratwurst. It followed him to college, this self-sufficiency, where he immediately took a passionate interest in the canon of conservative economic theorists and writers Ayn Rand and Friedrich Hayek, Milton Friedman, and Ludwig von Mises, who inspired the up-and-coming generation of libertarian-minded activists and lawmakers. Now that's in the New York Times. There's something missing. There's something missing. Now, this is very pointed to me because I am of a certain age and I have an 8-year-old daughter. So, were I to die tomorrow, tonight, 5 minutes from now, next week, or if you have children, and you don't have to be of a certain age, and you die tonight, tomorrow, 5 minutes from now, or next year, guess what happens? Well, let me refer to Charlie Pierce at Esquire, who had this at his blog at esquire.com, Charlie Pierce. Charlie Pierce says the following: how can you possibly write that passage that Mike Malloy just quoted? I added that part. And dismiss idly as a contradiction the ironic, not to mention hilariously hypocritical, fact that after his father passed and while working the Fry station and toting canoes at a YMCA summer camp, Ryan was also the beneficiary of Social Security survivors' benefits. Now, the point that Charlie Pierce is trying to make, the New York Times splashes all this, oh, look, he pulled himself up by his own canoe paddles. Look, look, look. He did it all himself. He got very mature when his father died. Without mentioning the fact that young Master Ryan had a check coming in every single month from the dreaded federal government. And now Paul Ryan would like to deny other fatherless children the same benefit. Charlie Pierce at Esquire goes on, the checks did precisely what they were designed to do, which was to help young Paul Ryan get the education that would help him become the adult Paul Ryan who's been on one government payroll or another since he left college and who goes around telling half-dim audiences that people on government assistance are mired in a culture of dependency. Really? Does that include young Master Ryan? Does that include adult Mr. Ryan? Or is that kind of garbage vomited out of his mouth strictly for the dim bulbs who listen to this jerk and say, yup, 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 that's true. Yup, 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 okay. You know, he can Ludwig von Mises all over his dinner plate if he wants to, but as Charlie Pierce points out, if it wasn't for Franklin Roosevelt and Lyndon Johnson and the munificence of the American taxpayer, Paul Ryan would still be in Janesville, Wisconsin, looking for a job. Isn't this the truth? Now, there's more from Charlie Pierce here that I just have to expand on a little bit. Pierce says, I was struck by the revelation in the Times, the peon to zombie-eyed, granny-starving, young, up-from-the-muddy-bootstraps Paul Ryan, the plucky, burger-flippin' success story from darkest Janesville, Wisconsin, and that he had amassed a fortune of between 3 and 7.7 million without having held a more lucrative job than congressman at any point in his adult life. And then I noticed another item, namely the following. Now, remember last night we talked a little bit about Jan Ryan? Mr. Ryan reported two tax-deferred college savings plans. This was in the Times. With a combined value of between $150,000 and $300,000, he also reported two investment partnerships worth in total between $350,000 and $750,000, mostly containing shares of stock in well-known companies, including Apple, Goodrich, Kraft Foods, Visa, and Whole Foods. Both partnerships were formed by Mr. Ryan and other family members to manage the assets left by his grandparents and an aunt. Mrs. Ryan has reported receiving a trust after her mother died in 2010 that is valued between $1 and $5 million. According to a letter Mr. Ryan filed with his latest financial disclosure, Mrs. Ryan also has longstanding interests in several mining and oil exploration investments in Oklahoma and Texas, managed by her father, Dan Little, a lawyer in Oklahoma whose clients include oil and gas companies. Those investments generate as much as $150,000 in income per year. End quote, end quote, end quote. So, as Charlie Pierce writes, so he's not the son of poor Smallville dirt farmer Jonathan Kent and his wife Martha, after all. Where does the family dough come from? A construction company founded by great-grandpa Ryan. And the Rude Pundit, I'm sure you've been to his website, went wandering through Google Stan, and what did he find? Among other nuggets, this thing right here. Quote, the Ryan workload from 1910 until the rural interstate highway system was completed 60 years later was mostly highway construction. Highway? Government work? You mean highway construction? Why? You mean stuff funded by the county? That's government. Or state? That's government. Or feds? That's government. Why, Ayn Rand is throwing up in her coffin. Oh, my goodness. Charlie Pierce goes on, and I want to share a little bit more with you when we come back. So, it's not just hypocrisy. It's not just irony that these weasels wallow in. It's also God. Damn lies. Before the hour, the hypocrisy of Ryan and Romney is just monumental. I mean, it really is. Even Romney has used every bit of government assistance he could use, mostly in avoiding taxes and building his fortune. And Ryan's inherited fortune comes from his grandpappy having done about 60 years worth of road construction in the great state of Wisconsin. As Charlie Pierce points out at Esquire, the fact that this money comes from his wife's family and inheritance and from Paul Ryan's family and inheritance that was put together by doing contracts for various government paychecks. I mean, this is just... It just makes me want to rip my eyeballs out and throw them at both these clowns. But as Charlie Pierce points out, this partly explains the outburst of weasel speak that Paul Ryan dropped on Ryan Lizza of the New Yorker when Lizza cornered him at the logical end of all the government bashing on which he'd built his career. You know, Paul Ryan, all the time. When I pointed out to Ryan the government's spending programs were at the heart of his hometown's recovery, he didn't disagree. but he insisted that he has been misunderstood. Ryan said, quote, Obama is trying to paint us as a caricature, as if we're some bizarre individualists who are hardcore libertarians. It's a false dichotomy and intellectually lazy. Of course we believe in government. We think government should do what it does really well. But that it has limits, and obviously within those limits are things like infrastructure, interstate highways, and airports. No kidding! You hypocritical punk! So, why not, Democratic National Committee, that doesn't listen to this program at all, as a matter of fact, I embarrass them, why don't you take a direct quote from Ryan? Of course we believe in government. We think government should also do those things on which my family traditionally has been able to turn a pretty buck. He didn't say this, but he might as well. So I could one day buy the handsome Georgian mansion back home that's on the National Register of Historic Places. So a couple of days ago, Charlie Pierce goes on, as he joined the ticket led by presidential candidate G.I. Love Money, formerly employed by the Game of Life. This is what Paul Ryan, who owes his family fortune to government construction projects, said. Quote, this is what Ryan said. He's standing up on the podium with Romney. Quote, I'm proud to stand with a man who understands what it takes to foster job creation in our economy. Someone who knows from experience that if you have a small business, you did build that. Really? But as Pierce points out, his entire life and the history of his entire family makes a lie out of everything this man has said in his entire political career, and a sham out of every policy position he purports to hold. It seems to be... There used to be a word for that. What I do know is that in 20 years, a lot of people in the Beltway who are in the business of writing about this clown today are going to look back at what they've written and said about this faker and drink themselves into an early grave. Charles Pierce, writing at Esquire.com blog. It is just so true. Anytime you just scratch the surface of these self-made millionaires, you find a couple of things. First of all, you're going to find that 99.9% of them are Caucasian. Secondly, what you're going to find is a huge chunk of inherited wealth. Huge chunk of inherited wealth. So big that unless you're just a profligate drug user, you couldn't spend it all in your entire lifetime. And then you're going to find, if you scratch a little deeper, somewhere back there, a lot of income that built that inherited wealth that came from doing business with the government. The hated, dreaded government. The government that the right-wingers continue to tell the half-witted, vampire-eyed freaks who sit there and say, yup, yup, I'm sure going to vote Republican. Yup, yup, I don't like the black guy in the White House. He's a socialist. Continue to tell them the lies and deception, and they continue to suck it up, to eat big chunks of it. Well, the wealthy 0.1% in this country just continues to laugh its ass off. When, stupid question last for this program, when are you brain dead right wing morons going to realize how deeply and thoroughly you're being played? Don't answer, because I already know the answer. Never. See you tomorrow night. I'm Mike Malloy. Take care. Keep it lit.
Stay tuned.